Thank you, Ms. Newport. We have received your submission. And I understand that information has been provided to you about the giving of evidence to committees and the protection of witnesses. So if for the Hansard record, if you could please just state your full name and the capacity in which you appear today.
Jennifer Margaret Newport.
And Mr. Garrels and Mr. Fuller, I understand you're simply there to provide some support to Ms. Newport, Mrs. Newport.
So, yes, I'm Glenn's mother.
Yes. Mm-hmm. All right, so we invite you to make some remarks to the committee, and that'll be followed by some questions.
I'm really going to just follow what I put in my submission in my opening address. Glenn, I'll tell you a little bit about Glenn. He was a big athletic construction worker, concrete worker. He'd always been very fit, very keen, lifting weights, et cetera, right from a very young age. So he knew his capacity, and he knew a lot of his own body physiology and stuff like that, so that he knew what he could do and what his body was capable of and when it was under stress. On the particular day that he died, they were working outside in temperatures above 45 degrees. They were working in out in Western Queensland at Roma, preparing concrete pads for the big gas pipelines that went up to Gladstone. They were working on black plastic. They were told before they went out, just go slowly, go just work as you can, which they did. They didn't do a lot of work because it was just so hot. They at one stage they were perspiring so much that there were pools of sweat on the black plastic that they couldn't hold their tools because that was so hot. And their hands were just wet all the time. No electrolytes were issued prior to leaving camp, even though it was deemed to be a red alert day. He was taken to the camp clinic. He started feeling sick around about lunchtime. He was taken back to the camp clinic in the early afternoon, suffering all the symptoms of severe heat stress. Nausea, high temperature, cramps, pins and needles, unsteadiness and disorientation. He was kept at the camp clinic for nearly 2 hours, even though the written safety procedures of the company, McConnell Dowell, stated that those symptoms seek immediate medical assistance. He was not given a drip, allegedly because the nurse and paramedic did not know how to insert a cannula. There was no attempt to cool his core body temperature by removal of his heavy clothing or they can put ice packs underneath their arms and things like that. That wasn't done either. It was basic first aid, which wasn't administered. Allegedly, the nurse and the paramedic tried to ring a company doctor and nurse, but could get no response. And from then, they didn't attempt to try and contact the medical hospital or the staff down at Roma, which was only 40 minutes away. He was kept at the clinic for 2 hours, and then it was closed for the day. And then he was sent from the clinic back to his donga, even though he told them he was still having pins and needles in his hands and that he didn't feel that he was well enough to leave the clinic. He was still unwell and unsteady on his feet. The medical staff did not accompany him or bother to check on him. He had to walk, I think it was about 200 to 400 metres back to his donga, unassisted. He was given a mobile phone number to ring if his condition worsened. In other words, to self-assess himself when he really was in no state to assess what sort of state he was in. And it was well known throughout the camp that to be able to get reception on your mobile, you had to walk outside your donga, walk a few metres away. They didn't bother to come and check on him, and he collapsed 2 hours later in his donga and died as he was being transported to hospital. Due to a number of excuses, the department prosecutor deemed that they could not take any action against the company. From further investigation, we've discovered that the also there was a coroner's inquest. There was also an ombudsman investigation into a series of different workplace deaths. Glenn's case was one of them, and it was shown that the initial investigation by WorkSafe was totally inadequate and underscoped. The investigators did not arrive. He died on the Saturday night. They did not arrive until the Monday morning. The initial interviews were done by the police, who seemed to be under the impression, when they came and told us that Glenn had died, that he had taken something. And it seemed to be their investigation seemed to be skewed to the thing that he might have, you know, taken something in his donga, which had fallen over and hit his head. By the time the WorkSafe staff got out there, the company had sent all his workmates home on bereavement leave, so they were not interviewed until well over a week later when they came back to work. In between times, one of the workmates, who just coincidentally through a family friend, came and talked to us about what had happened. He was with him all of the day and all of the time that he was in the clinic. And what he told us that day was pretty much, was very clear, was very, there was a lot of information that he gave us. Yet, when we read his interview with WorkSafe, a lot of that information wasn't there. He was accompanied, a lot of them were accompanied when they were interviewed by company lawyers, supposedly to just help them as they talked to the interviewer. And the lawyers were apparently telling them what was relevant and what wasn't, what they needed to tell the interviewer and what they didn't. I think when we first talked to Brendan when he came round to the house, he seemed really concerned that it was going to be the workmates that were going to cop the blame for this. He said they put the pressure on us to assess how our workmates are suffering, or and these are guys who are construction workers. They don't know. They know, okay, that it's heat stress can be fatal, but they're not medically trained, and yet the company was putting it on them that they somehow, they should have brought him in earlier. But what was the point? The company medical contractors never sent him any further. In the subsequent investigation and then the inquest, the reason for why they never sent him to hospital was never established. They just kept saying that he was well enough to be released from the camp clinic, that they didn't think he was ill. Our own belief is that he was kept at the clinic deliberately and not taken to hospital because of a system that the construction use as reportable lost time injuries. And I'm not sure if you are aware how it works, but reportable lost time injuries are set against your a company record. And if you have more than so many reportable lost time injuries, your ability to tender for different government contracts is limited. The company that he was working for, McConnell Dowell, had allegations in New Zealand of deliberately doing this. And there are anecdotal allegations that they are still doing it in Australia.
The award.
Oh, yes. After Glenn's death, the company, it was only 2 or 3 weeks after Glenn's death, the company issued gift presentations of, I'm not even sure what they were, to every employee out there because they had reached, I think it was 500,000 hours with no lost time injuries. So the company took those the lost time injuries levels very, very seriously. It just seemed amazing to the employees that here they were, not acknowledging Glenn's death at all, trying to pretend that he'd somehow done something to himself. There was absolutely no... Glenn hated drugs or anything like that, and there was no sign of any drugs or anything in his body at the autopsy. I've sort of lost my way a wee bit.
Did the police ever explain why they might have led you to believe that there were substance issues when they first reported his death to you?
No, they just kept... They were more... he had just come back from a funeral of a friend. And the police officers that came into the house just kept asking us, you know, what sort of frame of mind was he in when he went back to work. And we couldn't work out what they were, why they kept asking. Someone told me that the police perhaps always do that anyway. But it appears that, to us anyway, that the company more or less gave them a red herring, so that a lot of questions were not. And I think obviously the WorkSafe followed the same line of thought. I was not, we weren't really happy with the outcome of the inquest. The coroner did make some findings that obviously if the company had followed those, if they ever bought into legislation, Glenn would not have died that day. But we're still waiting. Apart from the unions have actually brought in a heat stress or heat policy for work, that there has been nothing to follow up what the coroner has suggested. We did get a second investigation from WorkSafe, particularly to inquire why he was kept at the camp clinic. I cover that in one of my submission answers. Is
Mrs. Newport, if I could just ask, you mention in your submission, or you say in your submission, that you think the penalties are not a deterrent to a large company. Can you just talk to us about why you've stated that and what your concerns might be around that?
Because they're a large company. McConnell Dowell, what happened was they just brought in their lawyers. And they just seemed to be able to, it seemed incredible to us that at an inquest, which is meant to be non-adversarial, or whatever the word is, that you have a barrister. We're meant to be an inquest is to find it, get to the truth of what happened. And yet they had legal teams that seemed to be pushing the questions a certain way. And like the Kennedys, we felt an inquest, we put our faith into an inquest to get to the truth. So we didn't have legal representation. We felt an inquest is surely that to find out, to get to the truth and establish what happened. But to get back to your question, big companies, they can throw a lot of money into legal representation to get themselves out of these sorts of prosecutions. It doesn't affect the only people, it affects their profits, but it doesn't affect the shareholders' dividends. Well, the shareholders, yes, it doesn't affect their dividends, but it doesn't really come back and make them change their behaviour.
And just for a point of clarification for me, I did read the submission. I wasn't clear, though. Was Glenn an employee, or was he from a labour? Was he employed through a labour hire firm?
Originally, he was employed on that project through a labour hire firm. And how it normally works is from there, the company, McConnell Dowell, the main contractor, pick out the guys that they feel fit their criteria. He was obviously big, strong, he was good at what he did, he was quick.
So he then became an employee?
Became an employee.
Okay.
Yeah.
You say the decision of the prosecutor not to proceed with any action was questioned three times by his legal peers. Mm. Can you, you've said from what you've understood to be an inadequate initial investigation and budgetary concerns. Did anyone make a conclusion on that? Like you say, you believe that's why. Is there any documentation where that was actually determined? If it was questioned three times, did they formally respond to why they didn't prosecute?
Not really. I think the main thing was that they didn't have enough evidence. He didn't think that they would win the case. When, you know, they would, I think it, I assume that's what it was. He never really gave us an answer why the one prosecutor who reviewed it three times and each time came back with his original decision.
Yeah, same individual.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was
Peter Matthews from WorkSafe.
It seems from your submission like the process of reporting lost time injuries might be generating perverse kind of outcomes in that it provides an incentive to hide when things are going wrong rather than being upfront about it and addressing it, tackling it, you know, in an open kind of way. It's possible you're right about that. Is there a better way you can think of for encouraging honesty and transparency about these problems so that they can be part of a positive improvement culture rather than a penalty-based culture that would encourage that hiding approach?
I'm not sure. I think on a lot of construction sites, the safety officers are appointed by the company. And the safety officers are basically, whereas they should be going around assessing the site for the safety of the workers, but they're really assessing the site as where the company might be liable. I think if you had better trained safety officers who I'm not sure how you'd go about this culture of or stopping the culture it's even they provide incentives to their workers that if you hurt yourself, you know, there, but if you don't do anything or you go home and tell your doctor you did it at home, we'll keep you on full pay and we'll call it training or something like that.
Is there evidence that that's happening?
That is anecdotal evidence that is happening. They get promised, if you don't have any incidents or any injuries on the site, we'll have a slab of beer or whatever at the end of the thing and a barbie. So, of course, a lot of the guys say, no, that's okay, I'll be all right. What it happens is it means that there's a lack of documentation which of all the little things that are happening which show up that a site is actually unsafe. I'm not sure how you'd stop it happening other than having a very rigorous safety officer who is not sort of employed by the company. He's not working for the company, he's working for the safety of his workers.
I mean, has a degree of independence.
Yes, right. That's what I'm looking for.
Have there been any changes brought in Queensland since the coronial findings for Glenn, suggesting the need for temperature thresholds for work?
Not that I know of. Okay. Only through the the union, the CFMEU, have brought in a very strict policy. It's interesting, on that particular project, the other sites, Gladstone, had a very strong heat policy that anybody that suffered any type of heat stress, without even showing the symptoms, you know, that Glenn was showing, they would immediately be taken to hospital just to, as a precaution.
Mm.
And yet that that site, for some reason, wasn't under those sort of guidelines. I did hear from one of the temporary supervisors that came back down from Gladstone after Glenn died, that McConnell Dowell had been told, or that site had been told, that they had to fall in line with what was happening at Gladstone. But it was interesting to hear from his workmates that they hadn't heard that that was the case. So as far as they were concerned, nothing changed on the job.
Do you have any suggestions that you'd like to make to the committee about how the government can best communicate workplace safety information to people who are doing labour hire work and the people who are employed, employing labour hire workers? Because, of course, they are, under the Act, entitled, just like everybody else, to a safe working environment.
I think the construction industry in particular is very, just by the very nature of the guys that are working, they don't, I think they need very rigid standards or guidelines, because it's quite a macho environment. So you could imagine, if one guy thinks it's unsafe, is he going to turn around and say, you know, I'm not working in front of all his mates? You know, is he going to look like a, well, you know, what they call a wuss, you know, if he, you know, if you're not prepared to do that? So I think there does need to be some very rigid guidelines, so that it does give them, the employees, a chance to say, no, we're not doing that, we don't have to do that. Like with temperature, I know that in the Northern Territory they have a very definite cut-off. They have a very good heat policy, that once, and they have temperature regulators, some sort of machine that comes up to a certain level, and then it's the workers that are assessed, things like that. I think better training for a lot of the safety guys that are on the job as well, as to the dangers of heat stress. A lot of people just don't understand how dangerous it is. But I think it's training, and it's that same independence.
Can I ask you something that will probably be my last question, Chair, if that's all right? Here's what I'm grappling with. I'm conscious that you and a number of submitters say that what's needed here is increased penalties and more offences in this field, so that there can be accountability for people who do the wrong thing. And quite understandably, given the incredible loss that you and many others have suffered. But then I look at the example of the reportable lost time injuries that you submitted about, and it seems to have, instead of raising standards across the board, it seems to have produced an outcome where there's almost a subversion, yes, of the rule. It's in my mind as a worry that if we simply, I'm not saying that there shouldn't be an element of this, but if we simply use more penalties as the approach, we might create another perverse result in that people will be really motivated to, for instance, blame a worker for what's gone wrong, or say that there was a substance problem or something like that, in circumstances where if everyone faced or didn't face the same sort of big stick kind of outcomes, they might take a much more constructive approach to accepting responsibility and taking steps to prevent. So I'm not suggesting one approach is right and the other is wrong, but I am interested in your view of how we get the balance right in terms of sufficiently deterring without creating perverse outcomes.
Yes.
Do you understand what I mean by that?
Yes, I understand it. And I think that, you know, like for all the bad operators out there, there are very good employers.
Mm.
And there's always that element of no matter what rules that you put in place, they'll try and get around, you know, somebody will try and find a loophole somewhere. I mean, I used to work for an accountant, so there was always, whatever laws were brought in, there was always, you know, well, how do we get around that one? You know, that's basically, you know, perhaps human nature too. I think there needs to be, I think in one of the questions was that we need the role of employers and unions. I think there does need to be a more, if we can get it, a better relationship between unions and employers so that they can work together for the safety of workers. At the moment, I think it's that adversarial approach between the two is not making for safe workplaces at all. I know with Glenn's workplace, anybody that raised safety issues, and particularly one in particular, who was very concerned on that week of heat stress, was very publicly marched off the job as a troublemaker. And yet, a day later, Glenn was, killed, basically. I think it's probably something that needs to be worked through with people that are in that industry as well, and they know they know what's happening at the coalface and how perhaps best to approach that problem and to get the best workplace officers, the safety officers, on the ground. At the moment, there seems to be with the companies appointing them, and the very small amount of training that they only have to do 1 week of training, and some of it's only all online. So,
thanks.
Does that answer your question? I'm not sure.
Bits of it, yeah. Thank you, Mrs. Newport. I appreciate it. I know it's difficult.
Yeah.
So, look, I've just got one final question, and it may mean that I need to read the coronial report, but I was just wondering, so two things you raised in your submission and one just then. First of all, was the actions or the duty of care of the medical professionals at the site actually questioned and investigated, and were there some conclusions reached by the coroner in respect to their role? And secondly, you just said that a day or some days before, someone who had complained about heat stress was simply not asked back, or in your words, marched off the job. Was those actions actually investigated and looked at as part of the coronial inquest?
Yes, the person that was walked off the job, Dion Sipple, gave evidence at the inquest. But it was by, I think it was written evidence or made, it might have been by telephone. The medical officers were questioned. As I say, they... I didn't feel that they were questioned fully. When we got a second WorkSafe investigation, the investigator was quite concerned that the line of questioning at the inquest really didn't push far enough into those two medical officers. He felt that if they had been pushed a little bit further, they would have perhaps been a bit more forthcoming about why they didn't send Glenn to hospital. You'll see in later on in the submission that questions were sent in that second investigation to be answered by one of the medical officers who had now lives or resides in New South Wales, and because of state boundaries, etc., he was unable to interview him face to face. So he sent him a list of questions pertaining to exactly why they didn't send Glenn to hospital. But it had to go through the lawyer or the lawyers for the medical contracting company, who were the same, it was the same lawyer, they were representing them both. And although the medical officer responded to the questions, those questions were, the answers were never released back to the investigator because the lawyer just sat on them. And we assume, obviously, because they implicated the contracting company.
Can I just clarify something there? So the lawyer sat on the questions. Who sent the questions?
The second investigator for Queensland WorkSafe.
And so can I deduce from that they therefore have no power to insist on the lawyer handing over those answers?
No. Okay. That is why I've actually asked for a second inquest. If there was another inquest, we could get that those medical officers back on the stand again.
But at the moment, how's that quest going, Mrs. Newport?
I haven't heard. Okay. I haven't heard. They've pushed me on to send details to the medical ombudsman. The first investigation by the medical ombudsman, they said they couldn't rule on the case because there was two doctors or two professionals actually differed on the actual cause of Glenn's death. One was that he drank too much water, one that he didn't drink enough. And I would think it was a department doctor, refused to acknowledge that perhaps he could have been wrong. And so that they said that they couldn't investigate the medical, well, the ombudsman couldn't investigate it. So I complained about that, and they've come back with another equally obscure reason why they think that the medical attention that he got at the clinic was quite adequate.
So is all this in the coronial inquiry?
That part wasn't, because that happened later, and that has only just happened, right, in the last year.
Okay. So do you have some documentation relating to that that you
I
might
do,
be able to
forward?
I do, but
it's not with me, unfortunately.
No, that's all right. You might be able to forward that to the secretariat. All right. Well, thank you for your submission and your evidence to the committee today.